Want to get the most out of the tread on your tires? Burt Brothers is offering a free alignment check and $20 off any oil change. Book your next service online today or stop by any Burt Brothers location near you and let them get your car ready for the adventure ahead. Burt Brothers, complete auto care done better.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Episode of the Crimson Corner. I am your host, Michelle Bodkin, your Utah Utes insider for KSLSports.com. And my guest this week is a good friend of mine. You maybe will remember him. He actually played for Stanford a few years back. And now you can sometimes hear his silky smooth voice on the Pac-12 networks calling some games. Jordan Watkins. Jordan, how are things going?
Oh, things are going well. And I tell you what, for the most part, I think if you're a Utah fan, you might remember me more so for calling games than you will for me on the field. But no, I had a chance to call a couple of Utah softball games these last few years, and that's been a bunch of fun. But how have you been?
Oh, it's you know, it's busy. It's that time of year where there's like three or four different things going on at the same time, and you're supposed to keep track of every single one of them. And you would think it's not that hard having, you know, your entire job just be that. And it actually is incredibly hard. There is stuff that sneaks up on me all the time. And I'm
totally
just like,
totally get it.
How totally did that happen?
Right.
But I mean, let's talk about happier things than, you know, the absolute zoo that work can sometimes be. We have a great football. Well, I don't know. Maybe you might have a different opinion. I love it when Utah and Stanford play each other. It's typically mm-hmm. been a very good game. Lately, maybe not so much. You know, what are your initial thoughts heading into this weekend with Utah football and Stanford football meeting up in Rice-Eccles?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty funny that you brought up the phrase of happier things. I think maybe happier is one-sided, but
maybe happier for me.
Right. But no, I'll say this. I mean, even when I was still at Stanford and playing, the one thing I always used to think about Utah is, you know, for us at Stanford, I didn't think that there was a more physical team in the conference than how we played. But if there was a team that was in the running for it, it was Utah. That was it. It was Stanford and Utah. There was nobody else that was on that level of physicality. And, you know, it's just year in and year out, I'm so impressed with what Coach Witt and his staff, what they're able to put together. Because, you know, if you look at the recruiting rankings and all this stuff, yeah, Utah usually is not going to pop off to you. But they are probably, I'd say, outside of Alabama the last decade plus, they've been the most consistent program in college football. And I stand on that. Now, in terms of this weekend, it's going to be, I mean, honestly, it might be tough for us. You know, it's a very tough place to play. I know, you know, the Musk, they get going, they get loud and rowdy. And, you know, Stanford, they've been dealing with a lot of injuries. I mean, even last game, I think in the first three or four plays, they had three or four defensive starters go out. They've been dealing with some things on the offensive line. Some of their, I think the top two or three running backs now are out probably maybe the rest of the year. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a challenge, but you know, sometimes, especially in this conference, we know how crazy this conference can be. When things look bleak or they look kind of grim, that's usually when some of the biggest performances and best performances come out. So it'll be interesting to see, but I mean, obviously if you look at it on paper and especially what Utah did to us last year, it'll be tough. It's going to be a tough game for sure.
In fairness, Utah is also dealing with their rash of injuries. It's a little unknown exactly Most of them have not been season-ending injuries, but you still have guys sitting out or resting or playing still, but they're not quite to their full capabilities. And those can all kind of add up and equate to, you know, maybe evening the playing field or being a disadvantage. So it just, it's kind of sounding like it's a matter of maybe who's the healthiest.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point, because I know for y'all, obviously, I think even the Washington State game a few weeks back, I think Cameron Rising didn't play in that game. Tavion Thomas didn't play in that game. I think, was it, I know, like, obviously, y'all have two phenomenal tight ends. You probably have the best tight end group in the country. Mm-hmm. But for a while, I think it was Brant Keithy, who has been, or was it Dalton? I can't.
Brant's been out for a while now.
Yeah, Brant's been out for a while. And then I think Dalton also got hurt pretty recently in a game too. Mm-hmm. But that's what's honestly has impressed me so much about Utah this year is the fact that, you know, if you went into this year, what are the things that you would say that are going to make sure that they're successful? You know, the defense is going to bring it. Obviously, their secondary is really good. Clark Phillips has been leading the way with that. I actually think he got hurt. Was it a couple of games ago too?
I think he got a little stinger.
Yeah,
that's right. He's continued to be out on the field, so whatever it is, mm-hmm. wasn't that serious.
But, right.
But it didn't look like it felt great in the moment, so.
Exactly. But, I mean, even with that, like they still found a way to make things work. I think on offense, again, it's the running game, and then, of course, you need to make sure you can control those tight ends. And so even when they get hurt, they find a way to still make things happen and make things work. I think it's just a testament to, you know, I can't even say the foundation that Witt is building, because he's already built it. Mm-hmm. But you see the benefits of it, right, with all those injuries that they sustained to key players and key positions, but the engine just keeps rolling.
What do you think it's been about Stanford the past few years that's gone wrong? Because at least for a lot of people on the outside, they look at this thing and they're confused by it, but I think those that are a little more in the know are not as confused.
No, that's a good question. I think at the end of the day, it's part of the mentality. The reason why I say that is, you know, when I was there, and even before I was there, some of those teams before me, there was, you know, we had those things in terms of partying in the backfield, rager in the end zone. That was one that the offense kind of came up with. There was intellectual brutality. You know, those were all the things that were kind of our calling card. And remember, I told you at the beginning, it was Stanford and Utah. Those are the two teams that were at the top in terms of physicality in the conference. But now I feel like you can talk about there are a lot of other teams that have really either matched us or maybe have surpassed us in that regard. Whether that's Oregon, UCLA, you know, the list kind of goes on with that. And, you know, I think that's kind of been the big thing. Right? I think for most teams in the past, when you play Stanford, you would still feel it that next game. Like, it'd still be hurting. You know, maybe some people don't want to practice as much because they got to be in the hot tub or whatever the case may be. And as of late, these last few years, I don't know if that's been fully the case anymore.
Tanner McKee is a guy that NFL scouts love. I don't know that, again, for the average person that necessarily shows up in game time. What is it about Tanner McKee that sticks out to people with, I think, maybe a stronger football knowledge?
Sure. No, I think for Tanner McKee, there are about, I'd say, four or five throws every game that he'll make where it just pops to you. Where it's like, wow. How did he get in that window? Or how did he make this happen? I mean, obviously with Stanford, I mean, I talked about Utah and how well they use their tight ends. Well, that's also been a calling card for Stanford for the last, you know, almost feels like 20 years, right? In terms of, you know, using Kobe Fleener, Levine Toilolo, Austin Hooper, Dalton Schultz, and now obviously it's been Benjamin Urosik. And there's certain throws where on the middle of the field, he'll find that seam and just hit it. And it's like, how did you do that? And I think that's the thing for him. You know, he's not the most athletic guy in terms of he's going to run all over the field and beat you that way. But he has his moments sometimes where he can help expand the play. Like, he's athletic enough to make it happen. But there are just certain throws that he makes every once in a while, and it really is one of those, you know, there's only a handful of people in the country that can make that throw, and he's one of them. That's really what makes him stand out.
Who else is standing out on this Stanford roster?
I think, especially as of late, David Bailey, defensive end, number 23, he's a freshman. And I remember even before the season started, I went to a practice and I talked to, you know, Coach Reynolds, who's a D-line coach. I talked to Coach Shaw, and they both raved about him so much. And in terms of not even just the athletic ability, the mental process that he already has as a freshman in terms of, okay, maybe this pass rush move isn't working. What's the counter that I need to have? Or if this offensive lineman is a high puncher, low puncher, what move's going to work against him? He already has that down. And obviously, with, you know, more time in the weight room, more time on the field, he's only going to get better and better. So he's really impressed me. And I think even lately, with the more injuries that Stanford has had and had to deal with lately, he's flashed even more. So you can already kind of see that learning process and that growing curve. It's really ascending for him. So I'm really excited to see how the rest of his career is going to go.
Not a lot has gone right for Stanford this year. However, Notre Dame went very well, and I think that surprised a lot of people. What was it about that game that has maybe or maybe worked better for Stanford than some of the other games they played in this season?
Well, I think, and it kind of started that game, and it's been trending this way. You saw a lot more pressure on the quarterback. They found ways, whether it's been blitzing, whether it's been up front with the front four or three, or, you know, whatever the defensive grouping calls for, they're finding ways to win up front, and that's been a huge thing. Obviously, now in this game against Utah, it's going to come down to the run game and how well they can stop the run. Because I think last year was it they put up over 400 yards on the ground against us.
Yeah, it
Something
was like
like
500 yards.
that. So, you know, that's going to be the big ordeal for them. And obviously, I'm sure that's going to be the game plan for them, is make sure we stop the run first and foremost. Well, knowing the heads, the minds in that meeting room, that's always thing number one, is stop the run. But it's going to be a special emphasis this week. And which, of course, sometimes that leaves you susceptible for the big pass play. But I think, you know, that's going to be the big thing for them, is, you know, stop the run and then go from there. But as of late, I would say the big things that have been helping the most is they found a way to get pressure. I mean, they did it against Notre Dame, like you mentioned. They did it against Arizona State. For the most part, they even did it against Oregon State. But of course, if you watch that game on ESPN, there was that last pass play that really just changed everything in that game. But that's been the big change for them as of late.
Where do you think this team goes from here after 2022? There's kind of been a lot of speculation. Does Stanford make a change? Do you see that happening at all? Or, you know, are they going to stick with it? Because I think in a lot of ways, people don't understand or appreciate that Stanford is kind of a tough place as well to develop a culture, find the correct kind of coaching staff. Just because there are standards that other places do not have.
No, sure. That's a good question. Honestly, I think for the most part, I don't see or foresee too many changes happening. And the reason, again, why I say that is because, I mean, if you look at their team, in certain places they are very experienced. You know, going into the year, I think the reason why there was so much optimism, especially for the offense, was you had all these experienced skill players coming back. You know, the offensive line last year, while they were really young, they were going to have experience in the be back this year. Now that you have that experience, you can really get running and rolling. But, you know, throughout the year, they had some issues and injuries up front. Michael Wilson just went down a couple of weeks ago. EJ Smith's been out for a while. Casey Philkins is out. So I understand from a certain standpoint, it's kind of tough to evaluate it in that regard. And then also, of course, you know, I'm saying this from, you know, the top down, right? That's one of your own in terms of Koshaw. That's one of your own. And obviously he's had success in the past. at Stanford. So it's tough to tell. It's not just a clear cut, okay, no, you had this healthy team, you had everything in front of you, you had everything there to succeed, and you just didn't make it happen. That wasn't the case, unfortunately, this year. So I don't know if anything's going to change or how much things might change. It's a tough call, really.
What are you expecting in this game come Saturday?
What am I expecting? Honestly, at least from the Stanford front, I am expecting nothing but hellacious effort. I think last week, if you listen to some of the post-game press conferences after they played Washington State, they were talking about ego. They were, talking about pride, things like that. And obviously, as any competitive human, if pride and ego start coming up, you want to respond to that. So I think, Stanford, this is going to be the hardest game in terms of just the effort they give that they'll play this year. Now, that being said, again, I think that Utah is the better team. So, Utah will win, but I think in a game like this, it's one of those things where if Stanford, you're looking for anything and everything possible, come out of this game, let's take these positives. Whether it's, we played them close or we had success in this area, that area. And I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, it's because it's the Pac-12 and this is how we roll in the Pac-12.
Little
Plus,
after dark,
a little after dark.
little after dark madness.
Exactly. I mean, we all know. I mean, who knows? Maybe the lights go off again. I mean, you never know. Like we saw that in Washington, Oregon State just the last week, right? The power went out. But Stanford, at the end of the day, too, like this is also important. Their bowl eligibility is on the line this game. They have to win their last three games to be bowl eligible. So you really just don't know. I really just fully expect at the end of the day that it's going to be the best effort. Whether the technique and X's and O's are right or wrong, I can't answer that. But you'll see it on tape in terms of they're flying around and playing hard.
I'm gonna throw you under the bus here.
Uh-oh.
You've expressed to me that you have been to every Pac-12 venue except for Rice-Eccles Stadium.
I know. I should have seen this coming. I will say this. I want to. I really do. It just worked out that obviously when I was playing for Stanford, I didn't travel when we went. I think it was my sophomore year. It was my sophomore year when we went down there. I didn't travel that game. So I'm still trying to find a way to make it down there. I've heard so many good things about the game day atmosphere. Obviously, especially the last few years. Unfortunately, the reason why, the passing of Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe, but I've seen the videos of all the tributes that, the Utah fan base makes for them. It's something truly special down there. It really, truly is special. So I really do want to make it down there. I'm not avoiding it on purpose. I promise. I promise I'm not.
I because we kind of are rounding the corner into basketball season and you follow women's basketball especially close, what are you seeing out of the Pac-12 this season with women's basketball, and where do you think like Utah and Stanford fall in that scenario since they were kind of the top dogs last season?
No, absolutely. I think that it's going to be another fun year in the Pac-12. I mean, no matter where you look, top to bottom in this conference, there's so much talent. I mean, even one of the teams I think that was projected to finish in the lower part of the conference, right? Cal, they had the freshman of the year basically, or right up there in Jada Curry, and she's going to be amazing again. I think that, obviously we're talking about Utah right now. They had the lone first place vote outside of Stanford in the Pac-12, which obviously means I think I know what coach voted for them. She might be a Hall of Famer, all-time winningest coach in women's basketball history, talking about Tara Vanderveer. But obviously, if she's voting for Utah to be first, because I know she can't vote for Stanford, that still speaks to what is there, right? Lynn Roberts has done a phenomenal job building that program. Gianna Neepkins is incredible. I mean, I remember watching her obviously in that Pac-12 championship matchup against Stanford last year. And even a bit into the NCAA tournament, and you just see like there's something building there. Now she's in her sophomore year. that's going to be incredible. But I mean, in terms of Stanford, you know, I called two games of theirs this week, and I called their exhibition against Vanguard last week. This might be the most versatile, most athletic roster that Tar has ever had. I mean, from top to bottom, they have multiple players, ball handlers that if they don't, if they're not creating an opportunity, scoring opportunity for themselves, they can do it for others. I mean, they have this one freshman, Talana Lopolo. She's from the East Bay out here. And in her debut, I think she had 10 or 11 assists and zero turnovers. That's like one of four freshmen ever to do that. Like, she's going to be impressive. Obviously, we know they're the only team in the country that returns two All-Americans with Haley Jones and Cameron Brink. Oh, yeah, by the way, they have the number one recruit coming in this year in Lauren, that 6'7 post player who, you know, she comes off the bench. I mean, imagine that, right? The number one recruit coming off the bench. Mm-hmm. And they have a sixth player of the year who comes off the bench as well, the post and Ashton Krechtel. So it's so – the team is so deep. I think the sky's the limit. And, I mean, we get to see them play South Carolina next Sunday on ABC. I can't wait for that game. I can't wait.
Women's basketball in the Pac-12, I think, is very underappreciated and undervalued. So sure. I'm so glad someone like you is spending a lot of time and effort on it and really kind of knows it in and out. And you know what? That kind of goes for the entire Pac-12 conference. And most people are not going to know this. You grew up in Atlanta, in the heart of mm-hmm. SEC country.
Yes.
And you are a big time Pac-12 in general proponent. What is it about this conference that you feel like makes it better than I think most people believe it is?
I just feel like, to an extent, people don't fully understand what is out here. And here's what I mean by that. Like, even so, I go back to my senior year, and I'm saying that as my fourth year because I was at Stanford for 5 years. Mm-hmm. That was the year that Christian McCaffrey was in the Heisman race. Now, that year, there was a Heisman voter. Don't ask me what his name was. I don't know. But there was a Heisman voter that actually came out and said, I did not stay up to watch some of the Stanford games and see Christian play.
I remember this.
Yep, exactly. Yep,
I remember this.
Mm-hmm, and I remember how mad and upset like Christian was for a while about that and just people not really paying attention to him. So, you know, we fast forward, we played in that Rose Bowl game against Iowa that year. And literally first play from scrimmage, Kevin Hogan, who was our quarterback at the time, hit Christian McCaffrey on the Texas route, boom, takes the end zone. And I just remember sitting there, it's like, all right, are y'all paying attention now?
Right.
But that's the thing. I mean, even now, you look at how some people across the country look at Bo Nix at Oregon, where it's, we all know what Bo Nix was at Auburn. You know, mm-hmm. I still pay attention to a lot of SEC football, whether it's, you know, my home state team or some of my friends. A lot of my friends went to Auburn, so, you know, I watched them, pull from them, all those things. But because he was so up and down at Auburn, now people see him having success in the Pac-12. It's just, oh, because he's in the Pac-12. And it's like, no, that's really not the case. I mean, I think right now, and I know I'm just speaking football specific, but like right now, I think the Pac-12 is tied, if not as the most teams ranked in the college football playoff. You know, because I think we have five.
Yes.
You know, with USC, UCLA,
Oregon
Utah.
State this week.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of good football that's being played out here. There are a lot of good sports in general that are played out here. And again, if you disagree with that, look at some of the NFL teams. Look at where they come from. One of the best safeties in the NFC West is Buda Baker from Washington. Mm-hmm. If you need a good DB, look no further than anything Utah puts out or Washington puts out. I mean, the Falcons, my team, again, I got to get ready to watch them in about an hour, which I'm not ready for that headache, but where is their quarterback from? Marcus Mariota is from Oregon. You know, you can just look all over and you see the Pac-12 influence anywhere you look. And so that's the thing for me. It's like, I get it. Yeah, I think to an extent, like it's been the easy jab to make jokes about the Pac-12. But again, if you don't really watch it or care to get an honest opinion about it, you know, that's what happens.
My last question for you.
Sure.
There is a very, very interesting race coming up here. Not this weekend, but the following weekend. Utah will be traveling to Oregon. USC will be traveling to UCLA. And those two games very likely are going to determine the Pac-12 championship game. This might be the most exciting round of determining who goes to the Pac-12 championship that we've probably ever had in this conference. How do you see this all playing out? Because I think all four teams are very, very similar in a lot of ways. I think their weaknesses and strengths are very similar. How does this play out?
Oh, that's a tough one. Oh, that's a really tough one. And first off, how great is it that the first year that we have this new structure for the conference championship game, that this is how it all shapes out?
Four team race.
Remember, yeah, because remember exactly, it used to be, just the leader of the South versus leader of the North. Where, I mean, if that was the case, you'd have a three-team race in the South, and then Oregon's kind of just chilling, pending what they do against Washington, right? But no, I mean, I just think that right now, if I look at how teams are playing, I mean, I think Oregon's going to be in it. I really do. I think that, again, the run that Bo Nix has been on as of late, and I think that, their defense is good enough. I can see them being there. Then you look at the South, and oh my goodness, it's so difficult because I think for the most part, I would say, and most people wouldn't disagree with this, USC probably has the most explosive offense, but we also know that their defense can be had. I mean, look at what Cal did to them last week. It's just a matter of if you don't let USC turn you over, then you'll have some success on offense. UCLA, I mean, it's a tough one because again, they have that two-headed monster, right? Dorian Thompson-Robinson at quarterback, who's playing his best football of his career, and Zach Charbonnet, who, I mean, good luck trying to tackle him with one person,
Move the chains in Charbonnet. I want to make that a thing.
See, my thing had always been, so you remember the song, I think it's a Big Sean song,
Yes,
Marvin
that's
Gaye and
what I'm
Charbonnet.
playing off of. Move the chains
There
in
you go.
Charbonnet
See, I always
instead
like whenever, so whenever I'm in the office, right? I just always say, I just say Marvin Gaye and Charbonnet. Like that's just what I do. But no, like I mean, he is so impressive. And of course, they have one of the sack leaders in the country on defense as well. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, I don't know exactly how it's going to shape out outside of, like I said, I think Oregon's going to be in the Pac-12 championship for sure.
Well, good stuff, my friend. I appreciate you jumping on. I will go
Yeah, thanks
ahead
for having
and we'll let you get back to your night, get back to your Atlanta Falcons. Hopefully, they do not fail you.
Well, they did last week. Did you see that game they played against the Chargers or how it ended up?
I did not. I missed
So,
that.
oh, it was bad. So it was tied late in the game. Shouldn't have been, but again, Falcons are gonna Falcon. Austin Eckler for the Chargers has the ball. He fumbles. We pick it up. One of our defense line picks it up. He starts running. Nobody touches him. He fumbles.
No.
Yes, and the Chargers get it back. Justin Herbert, again, Oregon, like I said, good football being played out
Right,
here all the time. Gets the Chargers back in field goal position. They hit a game-winning field goal to end it. It
Oh,
was
brutal.
the ultimate Falcons ending ever.
Oh, well, hoping for a better result.
You and your brother.
Again, thank you so much for jumping on. You have such amazing insight, not only into Stanford, but the Pac-12 in general. And I would love to have you come back on and maybe just talk more general Pac-12 stuff in the future.
You know, whenever you need me, I'm here for you.
All right. That was Jordan Watkins, everyone, former Stanford football player, now Pac-12 analyst, giving all of his insights into not only what's going to happen this coming weekend with football, but a little preview into women's basketball and just how the conference in general is kind of playing out. It's been an exciting year. It is winding down, sadly,
Isn't that
but
crazy?
it's so crazy.
Already.
So crazy. We're already here. We're already at this point. But I am about out of time here. So I will go ahead and sign off this episode of Crimson Corner. This is Michelle Bodkin, your Utah Utes insider for KSLSports.com. And as always, go Utes.
I ain't saying all that.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Casey Scott here, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Project Recovery, sponsored by Reprieve Recovery. It's a podcast about addiction, but more importantly, it's about recovery. My co-host, Dr. Matt Woolley, and I hear stories about overcoming addiction and going from rock bottom to living a healthier and sober lifestyle.
We also share strategies with people at all stages of recovery, and we hope it'll help you find what works best for you, and we can support one another. That's Project Recovery, a KSL podcast. Subscribe for free anywhere you listen to podcasts.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.